Justices, Ali. My name is Dennis Marks, and as a member of the Sarpy County Public Defender's Office, I was assigned to represent Sarah P. on this appeal. This particular case involves the appeal of two separate detentions with two different results. There was one detention hearing January 3rd that resulted in Sarah going home on an alternative to detention, electronic monitoring, not the CARE program, different program. And then there was another hearing on February 1 where the alternative to detention was revoked and Sarah was put in a detention facility.
And so you, within 30 days, had two orders from which to try to take an appeal.
Correct. I did not believe the first order was appropriate. There was no testimony concerning the facts surrounding her charges. There was not a, I believe there needs to be a probable cause finding.
Well, on that first order, here we know how long it's going to last. Less than 30 days, don't we?
Correct.
Haven't we, in our final order jurisprudence, characterized almost uniformly something of that nature as not a substantially affecting a substantial right?
Well, Sarah lasted 30 days on an ATD. I've had clients either, I've been doing this for 27 years, Justice. This is not in the record, but I will tell you anecdotally, I've had clients on an alternative for over a year. Okay. In fact, the longest was 19 months. I just believe that if you're going to impact a youth's freedom, their constitutional rights, that there needs to be a probable cause finding involving the charges that brought them in front of the juvenile judge, and for purposes of detention. We're seeing youth being overcharged in order to accrue points on that scoring instrument, which has been referred to as the RAI, the RAI, the Risk Assessment Index or Inventory. I think a juvenile judge has to hear testimony concerning the underlying basis of those charges to determine whether there's probable cause for each one of those charges that are considered in deciding whether or not to detain a youth.
Is that required by statute?
I don't believe by statute, but in my brief I cited the County of Riverside versus McLaughlin. It's akin to
48-hour
with bond hearings. After in Sarpy County, after bond hearings, the judge looks at affidavits of warrantless arrest to determine whether or not probable cause exists that individual should stay upstairs in jail, which now is across the parking lot.
Can I ask you about, you used the word overcharged a moment ago. Are you asserting that the state is charging offenses that they cannot prove?
No, I'm saying law enforcement is, I thank you for the clarification. Law enforcement sometimes is overcharging the youth, and then probation is relying on the charge that the law enforcement cites the youth with. And I'll give you an example. A youth takes the family vehicle without permission, heads over to Johnny's house, and parent calls law enforcement and says, my child is missing, and oh, by the way, he took my car.
So a theft instead of a joyride?
Yes.
Okay.
You got a felony theft instead of, and it makes a difference on the scoring of the RAI. The felony theft is 6 points, the joyriding is four.
And it can make unauthorized use of a propelled motor vehicle?
Pardon me?
Unauthorized use of a propelled motor vehicle.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's been a while since I've heard that phrase.
Come to my world.
Thank you.
I know this arose in the previous appeal, but we're sort of bleeding over into the issue side. You heard my questions about the Venn diagrams. Did I accurately characterize your position as that circle is all within the other circle?
It's the circle of life.
Okay. All right.
I don't think there were any facts that, and again, it's my position that, and the problem across the state is the intersection of section 251.01, subsection 5B, and section 260.01. We know you have to use the ray. As we discussed earlier, there's three potential outcomes: release without restriction, alternative to detention, or detention. But I think you have to look at the 260.01 also references 251.01 subsection 5 subsection B, and I think that is really the prism. So if a youth, I think they fall into one of two categories: nonviolent, where they're not a safety threat to the, a serious physical safety threat to the members of the community, in which case I think detention and the use of alternative to detentions are inappropriate.
So just to be clear about that, your interpretation of the statute is that no property crime, however significant, unless it attempts to cause a physical injury to another person, is sufficient to meet the standard required under the detention statute.
That's correct. And I'm gonna go back to some legislative history. In 2018, it was Senator Tony Vargas who introduced this bill that led to the changes. And in his opening statement, he talked about, and I apologize, this is not in my brief, or my reply brief, but he talked about the fact that they are trying to limit the number of detentions, and I would argue by extension alternatives to detentions, by limiting it to two types of youth: the youth who fail to appear in court, willful record, a failure to appear within the last 12 months. That's not for us today. The other one is, and that is whether or not that youth constitutes, you know, a serious physical safety threat to members of the community. So what they were trying to do is kind of get closer to the adult standard, and that is the youth who are in detention or are being monitored, having their freedoms restricted, they should be reserved for those two categories. If you're outside that category, then detention is not appropriate.
Under your interpretation, how does a court look at this particular case in front of it from the potential of a hypothetical danger that previous activity has suggested may exist in the future, or is the court limited to what actually happened in the past? Is it purely looking backwards, or is it looking both backwards and forwards?
I think there's a third area, and that is kind of what brought them to the court, and then I think there's a background, and then there's looking forward. But
you agree looking forward is part of the analysis?
No, I do not agree.
You don't.
All right. I don't, because are you going to restrict somebody's freedom because of something that may happen or may not happen?
Isn't that what the statute anticipates?
I don't believe so. I think there.
What is the factual situation
here? You had a young girl who was reported as a runaway, who was located by her family outside a hotel. Law enforcement, there was a disturbance. Law enforcement was called. They made contact with Sarah. She was taken into custody. She was charged with resisting and obstructing based on behavior that I would categorize as kind of slithering. So when you, I think, I don't know if you've seen, anyway, she was under the influence of alcohol, so she got an MIP. She had when taken into custody, she had kicked at law enforcement. She whiffed. But they charged her on the spot with an assault. The county attorney amended that, changed that to an attempted assault of a police officer. And then she was charged with an uncontrollable, which was a status offense.
So with respect to, tell me if I don't understand the facts, with respect to, is it the February 1st order, the secure detention, right, is based on threat to the community? Is that what we're now discussing with respect to the underlying facts? Is this the case, or do I misunderstand the record, that she had had, was it 6 ankle bracelets and removed them, and 3 have never been recovered? So does that give us some indication of whether or not the ankle bracelets are efficacious with respect to this juvenile?
Well, I'm going to go to adolescent development concepts and say adolescents or have the potential for change is almost limitless.
So is that a yes as to the 6 ankle monitors that were removed or lost or uncharged?
I would say as to the 6, but maybe not the 7th.
Okay.
I had filed the motion asking the court to look at that. May I continue?
You may answer, please.
Okay. So I had filed a motion to ask the court to remove the monitors because, as you asked me, it wasn't being effective. It was creating additional loss, additional crimes.
Well, it could be effective if it was charged or she kept it on. It was only ineffective based on her own actions.
Correct.
So that's saying detention in jail is ineffective if somebody keeps escaping. I don't think you can say it's ineffective in that situation.
It wasn't working.
Was she also kicked out of school and maybe had some alleged fight at school? Was there allegations of that?
Yeah, but they were never ever confirmed, and we never saw any of those charges. And this was a Douglas County girl in Sarpy County detention, and that's why a different electronic monitoring program was utilized instead of care. So I thank you again for your time and your patience.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Erickson, good morning again.
Morning again, Your Honors. Andrew Erickson, Deputy County Attorney for Sarpy County on behalf of the state. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, I was placed on this case a little bit late. I entered my appearance on Friday. But in reviewing the record, the only issue here that the state could recognize is whether or not the juvenile court had authority to detain the juvenile at its February 2nd hearing, which was a detention review requested by the juvenile themselves.
What about the first hearing? And Mr. Marks says there's no probable cause to detain or to an alternative to detention. Does there need to be a probable cause hearing? Does there need to be some evidence shown?
With regard to the detention hearing itself?
The first detention hearing.
The very first? Well, that would, I believe it's 43249 in the statute that states that temporary custody of a juvenile is not considered an arrest. Whether or not an officer has probable cause, I would assume that most officers have some form of probable cause to take a juvenile into temporary custody and have them screened for detention. So
whether the officer has it and whether the court knows about it are oftentimes two different things, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
So at that hearing, does there have to be any evidence, an affidavit or live testimony about the probable cause to detain the juvenile?
Yes, Your Honor. And I believe there was testimony just reviewing the orders. The state had called the probation officer, Ms. Sullivan. Ms. Sullivan was sworn and provided testimony. In reviewing just the orders themselves, the court noted that although it found the juvenile as a physical safety to persons in the community and that they would be seriously threatened, but for being on electronic monitor at that time. So obviously I was not there, but I would assume based on that order, the court had some form of probable cause based on what was testified to place the juvenile on an alternative to detention. And in this case, this highlights the two separate circle Venn diagram, whether or not the alternatives to detention are in fact detention, which I believe is the issue that opposing counsel is trying to get to, is do the juvenile courts have to make that specific, very specific finding that the physical safety of persons in the community would be seriously threatened or detention is necessary to secure the presence of the juvenile at the next hearing in order to impose an alternative to detention. It's the state's argument that the state or the court would not have to make that finding because alternatives to detention are just that. They're not detention. If the state had to meet that standard, that very high standard in set of specific instances, then why not just detain the juvenile?
I beg your pardon. So isn't alternative to detention the default? And then somebody's got to show why that's not a good idea?
Alternative to detention is not the default. The default is there's no restrictions imposed. There is the option if a juvenile is detained, scored, and there's no scoring or probation feels it's not necessary, that juvenile could go home without any restrictions.
So this escalates in terms of the order or
yes.
Restrictions? Huh?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is my understanding of the record correct that this detention review hearing was brought about by the juvenile's motion originally?
So in the review of the record, yes.
And the request by the juvenile was to do away with the electronic monitoring.
My understanding of the record is that, yes, the juvenile was placed on an EM originally on January 3rd. On January 12th, the state filed a motion for expedited hearing due to the continued behaviors of the juvenile. On January 23rd, there was an arraignment hearing, and the court at that time felt that despite the issues or multiple cut monitors, that she should remain on electronic monitor. On January 27th, there was a motion by the appellant filed to review the use of that electronic monitor. And on February 2nd, at that detention review that was requested by the appellant, the court found that based on her continued behaviors, noting back to all the previous issues that were noted in the court's orders, that the 43-251-01 subsection 5B1 standard of the physical safety of persons in the community being or would be seriously threatened, the court found that that was in fact the case.
Did the court have authority to make such a finding when this actually came across as saying, please reduce the type of supervision you're giving me, and the court then makes the decision to increase it? Does the court have the authority to do that during that hearing? If so, where does that come from?
Yes, Your Honor. I would equate it to an adult individual asking for a bond review and then having that bond upped based on new information provided to the court. In this case, the juvenile courts have authority under 43-254 that states that pending the adjudication of any case and subject to subdivision 5 of 43-251.01, if it appears that the need for the placement or further detention exists, that the court could order the detention, is my reading of the statute.
So be careful what you ask for.
In this case, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
One of the assignments of error seemed to be that there were a number of situations where there were hearings where witnesses were not sworn. Can you respond to that? And is that practice.
Your Honor, I will state that in some cases, the juvenile court does not request that witnesses be sworn. They're just asked. So in the event of parents coming into the court, sometimes the court will just address the parents directly and say, what are the issues going on in the home? Neither party is asked to swear that parent in and then have them testify. So admittedly, that does happen, yes. Whether or not that happened in this case, I'm not aware. It states that in addition to probation being called at the first hearing, it appears that the probation and juvenile's mother provided an update to the court at another hearing, and then additional information at the time at the hearing on February 2nd where the juvenile was detained. It does specifically state probation provided an update to the court, probation updated the court, and then a program director for Cedars, which was the services being used for electronic monitoring, testified. So whether or not they're sworn in, I do not know. With that, Your Honor, the state thanks the court for its time.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? Thank you very much, counsel. That concludes arguments in In Re Interest of Sarah. And you hence are excused. The next